Research shows that self-awareness, knowing who we are and how others see us, is the foundation for high performance, smart choices, and lasting relationships. Without it, it's impossible to master the skills needed to succeed in business and life. Skills like emotional intelligence and empathy, influence and persuasion, communication and collaboration. Integrating hundreds of studies with her own research and work in the Fortune 500 world, organizational psychologist Tasha Urich shows us what it takes to see ourselves more clearly, how to better understand what makes us tick on the inside, how to get others to tell us the honest truth about how they see us, and how to use this insight for greater success, confidence, and self-acceptance. Her new book is entitled Insight, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tasha Urich to the roundtable this morning. Tasha, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
What brought you to want to look at this, basically about our own self-awareness?
I've been an organizational psychologist for the last 15 years or so, and one thing that I always have noticed to be true is that whatever position you're in an organization, or frankly in life, the people who work on knowing who they are and knowing how other people see them are infinitely more successful, more confident, happier. They have better relationships. But at the same time as I saw that, I noticed that our world was becoming increasingly self-absorbed and increasingly less self-aware. So about 3 years ago, I set off on a journey to research the topic of self-awareness and found a lot of surprises that I'm sure we'll talk about today.
All right. So let's talk first about a definition and just have a baseline, which is how do you define and what exactly is self-awareness?
Great place to start. So it's made up of two types of knowledge about ourselves. The first is what I call internal self-awareness, which is what people normally think of when they hear that term. It's knowing who you are, what you value, what you're passionate about, you know, what do you want to achieve in your life. But at the same time, and equally importantly, we have to have something called external self-awareness, which in a nutshell is knowing how other people see us. And the fascinating part about these two types of self-awareness is they're completely independent. Everybody has a friend, for example, that thinks they're in touch with all of their deepest inner workings. Maybe they spend a lot of money every year on therapy or meditation retreats, but they have absolutely no idea how they're coming across to the people around them. And by the same token, somebody might be so interested in how other people see them that they lose sight of what really matters to them. So self-awareness is a process of balancing those two things and prioritizing those two things.
So if you ask the average person if they feel that they are self-aware, you are here to tell us that most people will respond that yes, they are self-aware, although your research shows otherwise.
Here's something pretty stunning. My research has found that 95% of people think they're self-aware, but the real percentage is closer to 10 to 15%. And the joke I always make is that means on a good day, 80% of us are lying to ourselves about whether we're lying to ourselves. And, you know, the intention with that isn't to get people down. It's instead to get us questioning and saying, am I really as clear about who I am as I thought I was? And if I wasn't, how would I know?
What does it tell us about those 10 to 15%? What are they doing right, and are they happier than the other 80%?
Unquestionably, they are. What they're doing right is I studied highly self-aware people who actually didn't start out that way as part of this research. And what I found was not a lot of patterns demographically. It didn't matter what age they were, what gender they were, what job they were in. But the commonality were two things. Number one was a value placed on knowing themselves, a very profound kind of personal value. And then number two was a daily commitment to increasing that awareness, whether it was through personal reflection, whether it was through getting feedback from other people, or even just questioning those assumptions we have about ourselves. And so that's the first place to start, I think, for most of us, is to entertain that notion that we might not be as self-aware as we think. And in doing so, kind of strangely, that leads to a greater sense of self-acceptance. And the people who had made these transformations unequivocally were happier, they were more confident, and they were more successful.
So in the book, these people you refer to as self-awareness unicorns. How did that phrase come about?
One of my research assistants actually said it as a joke really early on, and we started to laugh about it. And then we said, actually, this is a really good term because, you know, unicorns, everyone thinks they're special, they're right. mythical. No one believes they exist, just like these people who started off unself-aware and really came to have a deep and profound knowledge of themselves.
One of the things that you write about in the book, and I think it's fascinating because I think it's obviously psychological, but also so sociological, which is social media and what it does to us, and the fact that you argue makes us much more narcissistic and much less self-aware as a culture, because we almost inoculate ourselves from anything that is outside our bubble.
That's it. And we surround ourselves with people who share our beliefs and who will like the pictures that we post of our breakfast as though that is a greater sense of importance in all of our lives. And the research on this is very clear. It shows that there is a causal link between how much we use social media and how self-absorbed we are. And when you have that sense of self-absorption, you're not seeing yourself clearly. The other interesting thing, though, was that our unicorns, and I was shocked to find this, actually used social media more than the average person. And I was kind of scratching my head until I discovered how they use it is very different as well from the average person. So basically, instead of using social media as a me megaphone, they use it as a way to enrich other people's lives, you know, to post a beautiful picture they took or to recommend a book that they love or an article that they found valuable. It's really not necessarily about how much time we spend, but how we're using that time that can trip us up or help us.
The other thing that was interesting, I thought, in your research is that it's really across the board. You know, people will say, oh, that's the millennial thing. But it's really, this is something that cradle to grave narcissism.
Yes, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I also feel like as the oldest millennial, I have to defend my generation. Yes, it's true that, you know, empirically, younger people tend to be more self-absorbed no matter what generation they're in. But I've found these patterns, and so have others, regardless of age. So I think it's one of those very convenient delusions we have that, oh, it's just the millennials, and therefore it's not my issue to deal with. But I think we'd all do well to really question that assumption.
So how do we find a balance in that of, as you say, that you're the unicorns, they use social media more. So what can we learn from what they do and from their habits to become more self-aware, and not only that, but as I indicated in an earlier question, be more aware of our society around us?
Right. I think, you know, in addition to what I mentioned earlier about focusing on others and their posts and not themselves, it's also important to really think about the version of you that you're portraying on social media. There's a lot of writing that's come out recently that we sort of put forward this idealized version of ourselves. And the weird thing about that is when we do that and we compare the way our life really is to that idealized version, it actually makes us more depressed, less confident. And so it's not that I'm recommending that, you know, self-aware people post like all of the deepest, darkest, horrible secrets that they have, but rather it's to try to not post that idealized version of yourself and to be a little bit more honest. You know, to be honest with others, you have to start by being honest with yourself. So I think that's another tip I would give people, is to avoid the trappings of those idealized versions that we feel like we have to portray.
So you're walking down Sixth Avenue, and you see Sting, and you say, oh, hi, Sting. Is it okay if I take a picture? And you take a picture with Sting. Okay, so first of all, you got to meet Sting. Second of all, it would be neat to share that with people on your Facebook page, maybe. Then you notice that you have a small little ice cream stain on your white shirt. So you go in and you take just a little tool that removes that stain from the picture, and then you notice that there's a little blotch in your face. So you move that, and then there's that line under your eye and above your eyebrow, and you remove that, and then you put it online. What isn't, but that's normal, isn't it?
Well, who am I to say what's normal? The psychologist. One of the things I've learned is what we think is normal is not, and vice versa. But
meaning that we always want to. I mean, I understand your point, but yeah. We are always trying to present. You know, when people come over to the house, we try to clean up the house because we don't want them to think that we live in that squalor every day.
I think there's a difference between being sort of yourself on your best behavior or the best version of yourself and stretching that past what is reasonably true.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're photoshopping Sting in, or if you're, you know, like that rapper Bow Wow who
right.
posted a picture of his private plane and somebody caught him flying commercial on that same day, those are the kinds of things
okay.
that we're sort of pressured to live this life that maybe we're not actually living. That's where I think we get into trouble.
When you look at sort of the end game here, for those of us who have a lot to learn when it comes to self-awareness, for the unicorns, as you saw them through this journey, how long is this process? I mean, I know it's different for everyone, but how aware are you of how you're progressing in your own self-awareness?
It's a great question. I was gratified to learn that even the most self-aware people are never satisfied and never feel like they're done. Does that mean that we have to wake up every morning and put this pressure on ourselves? Definitely not. If anything, what the unicorns taught me was there are relatively small habits we can adopt on a daily basis that help us improve our self-knowledge. And there's something freeing to me about the idea that it's a lifelong process and we're kind of never done. We don't have to wait for this bolt of insight or to have this, you know, huge life-changing moment. We have those incremental insights on a daily basis. And if we add those up over the course of a year or a decade or a lifetime, that's where we can make those really dramatic improvements.
You have a quiz. There is a website for the book, insight-book.com, and you have an insight quiz to find out if you are as self-aware as you think.
This is my public service. I think that a lot of times we hear talk about this, but we kind of wonder where we fall. This is a pretty quick and dirty assessment. It's a smaller subsection of a bigger assessment I use in my research. But if people are curious where they fall, they can take the quiz, which also involves getting feedback from someone else who knows them well. And then it also gives a couple of tips for what they can do in small ways to increase their self-awareness.
I decided I would take it after this interview and not before. Feel better about myself. The name of the book is Insight, Why We're Not As Self-Aware As We Think and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. This is a very interesting book and really wonderfully told. Tasha Yurick, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. Pleasure.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Insight by Tasha Yurick. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.